Greetings and welcome to Shnai Mikra, the wonderful series hosted by the Orthodox Union, sponsored by the Orthodox Union, hosted at OU.org, in which we examine in each podcast one of the aliyot in sequence of this week's Parashat HaShavua. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom, and I'm delighted to be studying Sefer Shmot, Parashat Shmot, with you. We begin now with the beginning of the second aliyah, as we hear about the bravery and valor of the midwives who did not kill the children at birth or before birth, as I suggested. And Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yorchet, Chapter 1, Verse 18, Vayikra melech mitzrayim lamiyaldot, vayomer lehen, madua asitan hadavar hazeh v'atchayana tayiladim. So melech mitzrayim, notice he's not called Paro here, but just melech mitzrayim, as he has been through this narrative so far. And he calls the midwives and says, why did you do this and keep the children alive? Vatomarna hamiyaldot al Paro. They give him an excuse. Ki lo chanashim hamitzriyot ha'ivriyot. The Ivriyot are not like Egyptian women. Ki chayoteina. Literally, that means that they are themselves midwives. Meaning that, materim tavo alehen hamiyaledet v'yaladu. In other words, they give birth before we can come. They summon us. By the time we get there, then they've already given birth, and that we certainly can't do to take a living child and kill him, then they would be on to us. So what happens? They have this excuse, and therefore they do not fulfill their pharaonic duty. God was good to the mialdot, and the nation, again the same word, vayirev, grew, multiplied, vayatzmu, became more powerful. The nation continues to defy Paro's plans, the way that Chazal say it, Masachat Sotah, they said Pen Yirbeh, and I said Ken Yirbeh. The question is how to read Pasuk Chaf, specifically the Vav in Vayirev. Do we read it as God was good to the Mialdot, and he gave them whatever goodness he gave them and protected them from Paro, and in the meantime the nation was growing? Or should we read it perhaps in a more, if you will, conspirational manner, that the Mialdot were conspiring to help the nation grow against Pharaoh's plans and basically do their job, and therefore the nation's demographic and other sort of growth, whatever Vayatzmu may mean, was actually part of God being good to the Mialdot, helping them do a good job. And then, Vahiki Yaru HaMialdot at Elohim Vayas Lahem Batim, that since the Mialdot feared God, God made houses for them. Vayas Lahem Batim, the simple implication of that would be that they had successful families and dynasties that came from them within Egypt. At the conclusion of all of this, Vaitzav Paro l'chol amo lemor, now he comes out with the infanticide ruling, not as a discreet command to certain midwives or midwife superiors, but rather to everyone. Kol ha-ben ha-yilod ha-ya-ora tashlichu, kol ha-bat ta-chayun. Every boy that's born should be thrown into the river. So now it's not at birth or before birth, but once he's born, throw him into the river, and all the daughters can be kept alive. The simple read of this is that he's referring only to Am Yisrael. There's a famous midrash that this applied to only one day in history, the day where his astrologers told him the Savior would be born. And so he had every child thrown, every boy thrown in, suspecting that perhaps an Egyptian child would come to save the Hebrews. And strangely enough, that's exactly what happened. So we now turn a page to Perek Bet. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi vayikach et bat Levi. Notice that in this pasuk, unlike what we experienced in Sefer Bereishit, where nearly every character is named and immediately named, and the two famous characters who are not named, Chazal immediately associate as being angels, the man who helps Yosef find his brothers, and the man who wrestles with Yaakov at night, called an ish. But here, there's no names. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi, vayikach et bat Levi. A man from the house of Levi took a daughter from the house of Levi. And the simple pshat of bat Levi here does not mean a daughter of the man Levi, who's long dead, but rather a daughter of the house of Levi. So that this is a Levite marriage. Vatahar aisha vateled ben. Now what is a little strange in this context is that he marries her, she becomes pregnant, and of course that child will, we find out, will be Moshe. And yet, there is already an older sister around who's going to look after the child. Where does that older sister come from? So Chazal have their approach, which is to say that Amram, who's the man here, had been married to Yocheved, had Miriam and Aharon, and then Amram divorced his wife because of the decree, saying, what was the point of having a family if they're going to be killed? Miriam chastised him, and he remarried Yocheved, and that's where this scene comes from. But that's not the only way to read it, and indeed is possible, at least within the context of this particular parsha, although it will not necessarily fit with other segments, is that this girl is a sister from another family, or meaning from a different marriage, or meaning she's only a maternal or paternal sister, or it's possible that this sister means an aunt, another kind of relative, because we find, the, for instance, in Bereishit, that Avram talks to Lot and calls him Anoshim Achim Anachnu, even though they are uncle and nephew. In any case, there's some difficulties here. It's a little bit unclear, and you have to wonder why. Why is the text so murky, giving us no names, no lineage, just a man from Levi, a woman from Levi, perhaps indicating that still at this point, with all of the multiplying, they stayed loyal not only to the nation, but also to some, had some tribal loyalty, perhaps. But in any case, Vatari Shava Teled Ben, again, she has no name, she becomes pregnant, has a son, Vatera Otoki Tovu. She saw he was good. Lots of Midrashim, the house became filled with light, they called him Tov, whatever it may be. She saw he was good, Vatitpineo Shloshay Rachim. And the simplest explanation of that is, she saw that he was good and had a good temper, and therefore could hide him for a little while, and he would not make noise and draw attention so that they would grab him and throw him in the water. She hid him for 3 months. But she couldn't hide him anymore, because now he's 3 months old, he's making noise, people are aware of him. Strangely enough, she is fulfilling Paro's decree. Paro's decree was throw the boys into the water. That's exactly what she's going to do, sort of. She takes a basket of reeds and pitches it. She put the boy in it. Now, all the images that we have, whether from older movies or from more recent movies and picture books, are that she puts him in a river, and the river takes him downriver, and he happens to come directly to the place where Bat Paro is bathing. But that's not what happened. She put him in the suf, which means she's putting him in the reeds. She put him in a place where he's not going to move. Why did she put him there? She put him there because she knew that Bat Paro would be coming to bathe there, and was relying on Bat Paro to actually spare the child, which is very ironic considering she's the daughter of the man who made this decree. However, I will suggest a reason why that may have been a very good choice. So the sister then stood from a distance to see what's going to happen to this kid. So now we've got somebody watching out for him. So now who comes down? Paro's daughter, again no name, comes to bathe on the river. She's got her maidservants there. She saw the basket. She sent her maidservant to go get it and bring it back. Now, her reaction is going to be, of course, the reader is engaged in tremendous tension here. What's going to happen? Paro's own daughter finds a Hebrew kid in a basket. What's she going to do? What does she see? She sees a little boy crying. She had compassion. And she says he must be a Hebrew. How does she know he's a Hebrew? So one argument would be that he was circumcised. Okay, possibly. However, there were other nations in the Middle East that practiced circumcision. So that would not necessarily tell us that. Plus, we don't know that he was necessarily exposed in that way. The simple read is this. You find a child who is cast out into the reeds in a basket. There's one of two reasons for that. Either because he is a foundling, in other words, the mother wanted to get rid of him, or because he's trying to be spared. If the mother's trying to get rid of him, you're not going to go through all the effort of putting pitch and everything else. He must be somebody that the mother wants spared but can't hold on to. Why would that be? Simple explanation. Bat Paro knows about the decree. This must be a child of the Ivrim. And so if she was loyal to her father, what she would do is throw the kid in the river. So she could legalistically argue, they've already been mekayim the mitzvah of hashlichayu. They already put him in the river. However, on a more basic level, she obviously rebels against her father's decree. Vatomer, and this is what Chazal say, why she marries a fellow in Divrei Yomim Aleph Perek Daled called marriage, Shemar Dama Marad Batsat Meraglim, that's Kalev, she also rebelled against her father's decree. Now, Vatomer Achotol Bat Paro, so then the sister shows up, shall I call you a nursemaid from the Ivriot? So the nursemaid can nurse her. Now, why would the Ivriot suddenly be available for that? The answer is quite simple. If women are getting pregnant and then their children are being killed, thrown into the river, you got a lot of lactating women around. So it's very reasonable that there's going to be an opportunity to get an Ivriah who will nurse him. Watch the irony. Vatomer la bat paro lechi. So bat paro says, go ahead. Vatelech al mava tikrate meyalad. She goes, this young woman goes, and she calls the mother. Not ima. Notice, it doesn't say her mother, which, of course, lends to part of the confusion of who this is. Vatomer la bat paro helichi atayalad azev enikiuli. So bat paro says, take this boy and nurse him. Rashi famously says, helichi is a nevuah, he's really yours. So watch the irony. Paro made a decree that Jewish children should be thrown in the river. And now Bat Paro is hiring a Jewish woman to nurse her own child. So she took him and she nursed him. Now before we get to the ultimate Pasuk of this Aliyah, Pasuk Yod, just a comment about the anonymity in this piece. I mentioned, father's name is not there, mother's name is not there, sister's name is not there. The brother who we know is there isn't mentioned at all. The baby's name is not mentioned at all. We don't know the baby's name. Baby now is several years. His parents' house, we don't hear a name. And Bat Paro doesn't have a name. Nobody has a name. There's several reasons for this. One reason is that the text is deliberately trying to keep the focus on the baby and what happens to him and keep it away from any interest in the later people. We'll find out in Perek Vav who Amram is and Yocheved is and who Miriam is. We'll find out who they are later on. Right now, let's keep the focus on this baby because that's where the spotlight is. Nechama Leibovich suggested something else, which I believe is a perush that nobody would have thought of before World War II. As is well known that in the ghettos and even in some cases in the camps, in spite of the terrible conditions and in the camps, of course, the terrible atrocities taking place, people continue to get married and to have children. This, I believe, is what inspired her to make this comment about this piece. The very last pasuk in Perek Aleph is that Paro made a decree that all the boys should be thrown in the river. And now what's the next thing that happens? A man married a woman and had kids. And so Nechama says as follows, that the reason there's no names here is to tell you this is what a lot of people were doing. It wasn't just one family. Lots of people were defying Paro by saying, we're going to go ahead and continue family life in spite of all of your threats and all of your decrees. And look what comes out of that is a savior. Last pasuk here is a very famous one, but not well understood. Vaigdal hayelad, the boy grew up. So now he's a few years old. He's being weaned. Vatvieu levat Paro, the mother brought him to Bat Paro. Vaihila levain, meaning she adopted him. Vatikrash mo Moshe. Now for the first time we hear the most famous name in Chumash, Moshe. She called him Moshe. Vatomer kimina mayim mishitihu. Why is he called Moshe? Because I pulled him out of the water. There are several problems with this. The first problem, of course, is that mishitihu is not an Egyptian word. It's a Canaanite word. Egyptian is not a Semitic language. And for Bat Paro, who's Egyptian, to call this boy Moshe and then give a Hebrew conjugation for it is very strange. So that's why some of the Rishonim suggest that Bat Paro was already getting interested in the Ivrim and was considered converting and was learning Hebrew, and therefore she wanted to give him a Hebrew name. But if so, then she should probably fire her Ulpan teacher because she didn't conjugate it right. Moshe is not one who's pulled out of the water. That would be Nimshe or Mashui. Rather, Moshe is one who pulls others out of the water. And the Sforno picks up on this and says that the Nevuah is, you will be one who pulls others out of the water. But that's not what she says here. But again, the biggest problem is that this is not an Egyptian word, it's a Hebrew word. The Netziv points out that he had a student who was studying Egyptology, and he said, and the student told me, that the word Meses, or Moses, I mentioned this in the previous podcast, in Egyptian means son, S-O-N, child. And so now we understand what happened. Bat Paro took him, Vahila Levain, and she adopted him as a son, and she called him son. That's who he is. The difficulty with this, of course, is the end of the pasuk, because it doesn't say, Vatomer ki ben atali, but rather, ki ben amayim ishitihu. But we have to remember, this text was not written by Bat Paro. This text was written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai, dictated to Moshe to write down. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives his own commentary on the name, turning the name from an Egyptian name meaning son to a Hebrew name, meaning one who pulls others out of the water, meaning he was pulled out of the water, but he is a Moshe because he will pull others out of the water. We will talk about this in two podcasts at the beginning of the fourth Aliyah, when Moshe's name is invoked by the Ribono Shalom for the first time. In the meantime, that's how we're going to look at this. In the next podcast, I'm going to share a whole different observation about who Bat Paro may have been, which will then explain the mother's choice of having him be put in the reeds, specifically at the spot where Bat Paro would bathe. But in the meantime, I wish everybody a wonderful day. We'll see you in the next podcast.